And this week, Life is a Beach, your entrepreneur hour, brings you Stephen Key from InventRight, who tells you more about if you have an invention, what you should be doing with it. And then following his interview, we have Juliana de Toy of Karoo Space. And her and her husband, Chris, moved to Craddock and started to write books about the Karoo. Enjoy the entrepreneur hour with Janine from Life is a Beach. Stephen Key, I'm Janine Preston, and we're with Stephen. And Stephen's come to South Africa to just share his vision of entrepreneurship, inventorship, innovation, and the world of what it's like to be an entrepreneur. And I think you're a prime example of how we'd always all like to develop into being an entrepreneur, because all of us sit at home and struggle with the vision and struggle with the mission statement and struggle with what we've invented. And you seem to have just done that so beautifully.
Well, thank you for saying that. I'm a little surprised myself, because early in my career, when I was studying economics, I didn't like it. And I didn't like it at all. I didn't like business.
It's like business.
So I took an art class by mistake, I guess, and found that I love working with my hands. And I went home that day and I told my dad, I said, Dad, I want to be an artist. And he said, wow, you must like to draw. And I said, well,
because that's what an artist does.
And I said, no. He said, well, you must like to paint. I said, well, no. So he gave me permission to kind of jump off that ledge. And I enjoyed it.
That must be so cool to get permission to do that.
You know, my dad, it's interesting. He knew that if I found something I truly loved, that life would be pretty, would be a little different.
But they always say that if you do something you truly love, it's not really work.
I don't think it's work, because I think about it all the time, and I love when Mondays come around, and sometimes I start my Mondays on Sundays.
On Sunday.
And I also believe if you love the art of creating something, you could do it forever. You can. Why would you retire when you love something so much? So it was a good fit for me, and I didn't have a lot of skills.
And what did you do as an artist? I'm curious.
Well,
now that you...
I wasn't a very good artist either. Let's get that real clear. I knew that I was creative, but I knew it wasn't going to be this great artist. So I kind of put together a little bit of the art, a little bit of business, and just started selling things that I made at street fairs and county fairs, wherever I could set up a table and make my things. And I remember the first time it was at this little school, and I made these things out of nylons because I could make little funny faces.
Oh, my word, yeah.
And I brought them out there, and my dad showed up at the end of the day. He was going to check up and see how I was doing. So he shows up. I should have known that was going to be a mistake.
Not a good time.
Not a good sign. He shows up at the end of the day and he says to me, well, how'd you do? And I said, I did great. He goes, well, how many did you sell? I said, I didn't sell any. I knew, and he knew at that time, that I had to probably figure it out a little bit. But I was still intrigued by it. And so I went to another art fair and changed my designs and started to sell them. So I had to learn the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think that's always the case, is people don't realize there's a learning process to becoming what you want to become. But the world today gives you tools, because I look at myself, for instance, and I'm a creative person, but I can't draw for toffee.
All right.
I mean, not even a stick man looks good.
Okay.
But with the tools that we have today, you can actually create an animated object that makes your videos or whatever it is that you want to do so much more exciting. And everybody says, wow, you've done an animation. And I think, yes, because the software is so intuitive, and people have given you, they've drawn these things. Like Canva gives you these wonderful flyers. And you think, why would I want to go and create them? Now I can sell my business without having to worry about hiring an ad agency, because I'm an entrepreneur. I've always got money for that.
Yeah, the tools have changed the game. When I first started out, I partnered with someone that could draw.
Oh, well.
All right. That was a few years ago. But now today, and I think why the process has been very simple for me, is that I didn't know there was a right or wrong way. I didn't, you know, there was no roadmap when I started out. I
no. Didn't,
there wasn't any, and I didn't follow anybody. I just knew I wanted to make things. But I was very fortunate to be hired. It was a startup company, and I had read an article on Sunday, and they had this picture of this teddy bear, and I was making things now out of fabric. Pattern. I was a pattern maker. I taught myself how to be a pattern maker, and I thought, you know, I could probably make that bear a little cuter. So I just went down and knocked on their door on Monday morning and said, you need me. And they really didn't know what they were doing because they were a startup company, so they hired me. And that was my first job at 28 years old.
Wow.
First job. And everybody was happy. My family was happy. My friends were happy. I have a paying job.
You can pay for coffee.
You know, it was incredible. And it just happened that that company, World's a Wonder, created Teddy Ruxpin. They licensed it from an inventor, Ken Forsyth. And Teddy Ruxpin became a worldwide hit.
Wow.
Yeah. So it changed my life.
Well, Billy Joel, if you remember, I don't know if you know the story of Billy Joel, he was a dishwasher that did the piano as a part-time job.
Okay.
And the first time he got paid $1,000 for, or it was $100 for playing the piano. He threw up his dishwashing job, put the check up on the wall, and he was now a paid artist.
Well, you know, it's interesting how things happen. I do believe you have to knock on a lot of doors, and I also believe that maybe, you know, it's scary for people, right? I mean, when you're outside your comfort zone, you're a little nervous. And I've learned to be comfortable with that nervousness a little bit, right? So that started my whole career of really looking at things and making more things. But I knew I didn't want to be a business person. I knew I didn't want to run a business and or hire people. I just didn't understand that. But I wanted to make things. So I learned about product licensing, and that's what I'm going to talk about. This product licensing business model is for anyone in the world now, because I just license my ideas to companies. So I'm just a creative person. I'll look at a company, I'll look at their product line, and I'll look at it very carefully and look what they're missing or what are they going to do next. And then I come up with an idea and I send it to those companies. And if they like it, they bring it to market for me.
Oh, but that's such a good idea.
Well, it's a simple idea. And it doesn't require...
But sometimes doesn't the simple ideas be the good ideas? We always look for the difficult ideas. Actually, that's quite a... It's a simple but effective idea.
It's for someone like me that just doesn't have certain tools, I think, and want to be creative. That it's a perfect business model. It also allows me to come up with a lot of ideas. It allows me not to invest or take risk or quit a job. So this whole product licensing allows anyone in the world to do this. Anywhere in the world. There's no barriers anymore. And because of online, like Zoom, you can reach any company in the world now. And you, the tools that you just mentioned, you could, you know, do 3D computer generated rendering to create some sketch or some idea in your mind can come to life.
Absolutely.
So this is for everybody now. So my mission is really to help people share their creativity with the world. That's the mission. So when people understand this business model, that you could be in South Africa, you could be anywhere.
You can be anywhere in the world.
Yes.
I look at my business, and my business is online. And I have SA Commuter is online, TV and radio. And the reason and everybody said, why did you decide to start that? I said, well, first of all, I've been in radio for 20 years. And secondly, I want to travel. I want a house sit around the world. So what allows me to do that is online work. 20 years ago, I couldn't have done that because Wi-Fi wasn't that widely available. Correct. Now almost every home has Wi-Fi. So as long as I go and park my bum in somebody's house who needs their dogs looked after, I'm able to house at their house knowing that I'm not going to leave their home for any length of time. So I'm a safe bet.
Yes.
And I can work. So all I did was marry all these online opportunities and my desire to travel. Nice. And I put them together to create a business. And that's what I think what you're saying is, if you have an idea, just find a way to get it to market.
Well, you know, the companies have realized that maybe they don't have all the greatest ideas. And this word open innovation is sweeping the world, and it's becoming more and more popular. In some industries, they've been working with people like me forever, but some industries are quickly adopting this open innovation, meaning I'm going to look for ideas from anybody, anywhere.
Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. So, and a lot of people ask me, well, why don't they just take your ideas? Well, if they embrace open innovation, they don't want those doors to close.
No.
They want to keep them open. So they're looking for an idea from you and you and you, everybody.
But they also need the person behind the idea. Because an idea is just the door. If you open those doors and you close them by stealing somebody's idea, the door is now closed.
It's closed.
So when they open it, there's just a white wall behind it. Because the idea, any idea needs to grow and needs to be watered.
Yeah, the companies have realized that a lot of us creative people, you know, an idea can come from anybody, anywhere. And they recognize that now. So this open innovation business model, if you find those companies that embrace open innovation, that's a good thing. You need to check.
Absolutely.
Okay. And ask what the process is. How do I submit an idea to you? Then you start submitting ideas to them. And if they like your idea, they will pay you a royalty in each and every one they sell. It's a
beautiful. And I think that's just such a wonderful idea because it allows people that onward creativity. Because what I find, and a lot of people in this country, particularly corporates, will hire you because you're an entrepreneur. And they see all your skills and your ability to hustle, and they think, got to have this hustler on board.
Okay.
And they make this guy who has the desire to earn money because they don't earn enough being where they are. They now incorporate it into this company. And they're so excited to share their ideas. And in the first meeting, it's, well, actually, we don't do things like that here. And the same reasons they hire that person, they fire them.
Yeah.
Because 6 months later, the hustler hasn't changed. But the reason they hired him was because he was a hustler. And I use hustler in a nice word, in a nice way, because he's there with his product and his creativity and the way he gets clients on board. And your idea is so much nicer because now they don't have to bring that person on board. They only have to bring his ideas and his passion on board.
Correct.
And continue to pay him. And their relationship will last a long time.
Yes, yeah, so you don't have to fit into their world.
No.
You can be yourself and you can keep submitting ideas. I tell everybody, if you really want to be successful at this, find a few of those companies that you like to work with. And then once you start submitting ideas to them, it's really, you know, start to ask them, what are they looking for? Because then they'll give you their wish list.
No, absolutely. I completely agree. I think, and certainly if you look around the world as a whole, I mean, when I started, I was told I could never touch computers. I went to this place that could program. They did your test if you could be a programmer. And all I wanted in my whole life was to be a programmer. And they just, after my test, looked at me and said, landscape gardening has to be where you need to go. Computers is never going to be something you can do. And I just thought, I was devastated. I mean, they completely devastated me. But then I decided I would go and find a company that would take me on free of charge while I learned how to program, without realizing that program needs a certain amount of mathematical kind of and conceptual skill. I didn't worry about that. I was going to go and learn. And I learned it, I did. I stayed with the company for a number of years. Okay. And I saw programming differently. I saw it as, I need to do this, therefore I need to create that. And my whole life I've done that. So whereas programmers get given a brief and they follow the brief, but they don't always have the product in mind to say, if I had this product, this program needs to do this to make that product work.
Okay.
Or sell or do whatever it is that product needs to do. So with having your innovation ideas, I mean, it means that they can really...
Yeah, if they give you a target to hit, it's much easier. And so it's really kind of this perfect thing that's happening. Companies are looking for ideas from anybody in the world, and you have the option to come up with a lot of ideas, with work with a lot of different companies, and build those relationships. Here's the big thing. If you start to build the relationships with them, they start to count on you for those ideas. And I remember some industries I'd gone off and done something else, and even years later, they're saying, "Steve, do you have an idea?" Because it's a it's kind of a special thing if you can create ideas. And those companies are looking for people like us. What's really crazy about it, though, it's in almost every different industry now that companies are looking for ideas. It could be automotive, it could be pet, it could be hardware, it could be kitchen, it could be toys, it could be just about anything you could imagine.
And I think sometimes inventors, I watch Dragon's Den a lot, by the
okay,
way.
Shark good.
Tank,
okay.
Dragon's Den, my favorite. Peter Jones has to be my go-to man. And purely because I learn so much from what they say and how they bring things across. And I remember he brought out a product called Beezer, which okay. is how to create your own app. And I watched a back copy because I was sitting there figuring out where to go with my business from there. And I just thought, that is something I can do. Rush to my computer. Created okay. an account with Beezer, because the way that they hustled with Peter was all the dragons said they all want to be a part of it. And he went, I love you all, but I don't want any of you. Peter has to be my go-to guy.
Okay.
And I thought, what a brave man to stand there and tell all these investors that he only wants one guy. I thought that was very brave. And I thought, he's my man. And today I use their stuff extensively, and I've got a very good relationship with them. I'm one of their top reviewers, and I have 25 or so apps that are, and they learn from me because they mail me and say, I've got this guy who wants to do this. How would he do that? So they know how to create something, how to make it mechanically work. I know how to make it creatively work.
Oh, nice.
So it kind of shows how entrepreneurs don't always have the tools to create an idea. But if they can give the idea to the company that has the tools, what a great marriage.
Well, it truly is. And they have the distribution, they have the shelf space, they have the relationships with the retailers.
Absolutely. They have the sales team. You don't have to hire people.
No. I like to look at it this way. They're actually working for you.
They are too.
I know.
Because a lot of entrepreneurs don't have the people skills to hire people. They also don't have the funding. So it becomes this battle at the end of the month is, where am I going to get the money to pay this person? Because entrepreneurs are great people. They pay other people first before they pay themselves. And actually, they should have it the other way around. They should pay themselves first.
Well,
because they are the idea. But yes, as human beings, we tend to look after those and nurture those that we feel we're responsible for. But in this case, like you said, you've got this whole big company working for you. You don't need to have people working for you.
Well, I really love that concept. I was working on Teddy Ruxpin, the Talking Teddy Bear.
Yeah, the Talking Teddy Bear.
And I was in China on that production line and making sure everything was going right. And it dawned on me this idea about product licensing, because my father had always told me, in order to create great wealth, you have to find something that does not require these or your presence.
Correct, because it needs to live on past you.
Yes, or a multiplying effect. And that's what the product licensing does. That inventor, Ken Forsey, he wasn't there. He wasn't using his hands.
No.
And the multiplying effect was that factory making his product. That light went on. And he was making, I think, $1 million in royalties a month.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, okay. I want to try.
That's me.
I want to try. I have to try this. So, yes, I've been licensing.
And you've been sharing that concept with the whole world. I mean, it's not like you're a secret about it.
No. I've always felt that I was so lucky to figure that out, that if I could give it away, I would. And so years ago, a big book publisher, McGraw-Hill, contacted me and said I should write a book. And I remember
one of many.
And I remember someone said to me, well, you're not going to put all your secrets in there, are you? And I said, well, yes. And they said, well, I wouldn't do that. And I said, no, I'm going to give it all away. And I did. And it was the best thing I could have ever done.
I just think as an entrepreneur, one wants to share one's will, because you have only you. So it's not like you have a water cooler. So I create a water cooler of people where once a week we have a get-together on a Wednesday. And we have the Zoom call, and it's called our water cooler.
All right.
And you can come on and talk about anything that you need to, because it's our water cooler. So sometimes we discuss our kids.
Right.
And sometimes we discuss our businesses. And others say, you know what, I've got this problem and I really don't know how to resolve it. I have this issue with this. And somebody says, I know the right guy to help you. He's perfect for that. He has these details. Go and ask him. He'll help you. And it's a sharing, because I think as entrepreneurs, we miss that water cooler. We kind of want to just discuss things without worrying about contracts and silence contracts.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I remember the first time someone had asked me to talk about it. Like, talk about what? Well, talk about what you do. And I talked about it, and they were so surprised because they were struggling. You know, I met my partner at an inventors group, and a lot of those inventors were struggling with the commercialization piece. How do I do it? I need money.
Absolutely.
I need all this stuff. And I was like, no, you don't need that. And so I just started talking about it. And 1,000 articles, 1 million words, 5 books, 900 videos. I've just started. And someone had asked me, aren't you done? I go, no, I'm still curious. And things still change. And now we have Zoom, and we have LinkedIn, and we have 3D printing, and we have all these different tools now. So, no, it never ends. So it's fun. It's that world of creativity.
And everybody always, I bet, says, aren't you worried somebody's going to steal your idea? And I always say, but they don't have the person behind it.
Yeah.
So you may be able to steal the initial concept, if you like. But the person who thought about it has thought about the 7 versions after that first version. So if you don't have them, you don't have the rest of the product line. And that's why the product innovation just is you know, product licensing is so cool, because you're licensing the person with all their ideas, not just the front door.
What I do like about the product licensing too, when you do license it to a company that already has relationships with retailers and shelf space, that's fast.
Absolutely.
That's speed. And today it's the best protection ever. And what I tell everybody, look, the best thing you can do, just come up with a lot of ideas and share them. Get them out there, let those companies take them, and just keep on coming up with more. Keep innovating. That's how you stay ahead of everybody else. You just said that.
Absolutely.
It's never ending. So just keep innovating.
But it's quite interesting, because I also think people, especially entrepreneurs, need to learn that computers are not a scary place. Just because you work with your hands in a garage doesn't mean to say that you can't use technology. And I'm forever shouting about technology to all my mates who are, well, she knows how to use a phone, give it to her, she'll fix it. Or, you know, if she knows how to do this, just give it to her, she'll put the video together for you. And I'm saying to them, it's not about that. It's about using, like, I use Zoom. I use Zoom, a voiceover IP. Because for $10 a month, I can give whoever wants to sell my product or whoever wants to talk on radio, they can phone any cell and any landline for $10 a month.
Okay.
And they go, how did you find that? I said, because I spent time looking for, I knew there was a technology called voice over IP. I just didn't understand how it worked.
All right.
So I had to keep trolling the internet to find people who, until the penny dropped. I was like, I got it. I need data. They don't. I said, that's as simple as that. And then I married it to my products, and I said, now there's a bundle for entrepreneurs. He has a Zoom phone. He has an app that you can develop, and you can change it yourself. You really can. And they're like, but I said, I promise you, when you need to make an edit, it's cheaper than paying some guy 7,000 rand, because he's not going to make the change the way you want it anyway, because he doesn't have your vision. So put these tools up for 750 a month. You have all these tools available. And I'm always here. And they go, well, that's the best part, because you're the same age as me.
Well, you know what's amazing about the tools? If you want to license an idea, you don't even have to build a prototype sometimes.
No.
You can do a 3D computer rendering that looks like your product.
Absolutely.
You can make a cell sheet.
And so to the teenager, they'll render it for you.
Yes. And you can do all of that. So the cost is not an issue anymore. So that's the thing I'm trying to tell everybody. Don't let those obstacles stop you. You can file a provisional patent application. You have one here in South Africa, which is a great tool. You can have someone do the graphics. You can reach out to a company on LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
You can do everything.
There's all kinds of places that offer $10 and some guy will just start the drawing for you.
Yes.
And you can just edit it because everything is editable.
Yes.
And they've got these lifetime licenses for software. So in South Africa, the rand to dollar is so sad. So when there's a lifetime license, it's $69 lifetime license, I buy.
Good.
Because I may not use it right now, but then when I need to do something, I'll haul it up. And even if it's the very basic version, it doesn't matter. If somebody else has created something for me, I'm now able to say that's a product I can pitch. And I think a lot of South Africans, I don't know if it's the same in America, but certainly here, we don't do enough one-on-one visits.
Hmm.
So we don't go knock enough doors. We don't become that encyclopedia salesman. Remember the salesman that used to sell snake oil? How did he sell his snake? He went from door to door. Every third or fourth door, somebody would say, oh, what the hell? Let me buy it from you. And before you know it, you've sold 10 bottles in a day.
Okay.
It's more than you would have sold on Facebook or Instagram to people you don't know. But when you've visited those 10 people, there's 10 more people that know you, know your product, and you can go back to them with your second version and say, remember me, I'm the guy your dog bit.
Well, you know what's amazing about knocking on the doors, and I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, some people are a little intimidated knocking on the door.
Absolutely, because they
and but today with LinkedIn, you could let your sell sheet, that's that, here's the picture of my idea,
correct,
here's the benefit, let that sell for you.
Yeah.
So there's no fear here. And I tell everybody, all you're doing is dropping off a package to a company, go,
absolutely,
do you want it? So the tools have changed. It's a game changer.
And I also think when you meet people I always say to people, when you go and meet people as an entrepreneur and you knock on their door, they're going to say something that's going to twig something in your brain that says when you visit the next person, you have that in your toolbox that wasn't there before. That spanner that he just gave you is now a spanner to use at the next guy, because that first time you visited somebody, you didn't know that about this product. But when he says, oh, but this widget doesn't do that, and you think, oh, actually it does, but maybe I sold it wrong. So when you visit the next guy, he doesn't have a choice. You are sitting in front of him. It's not like being online. It's not like being on LinkedIn where he can ignore you and pretend he didn't get your message. You are sitting right in front of him. And inevitably, he also is quite appreciative of your taking the time. And there's going to be a lot of closed doors. But those that open, it's quite amazing.
What I love that you said is that feedback to go to the next one.
Absolutely.
So we tell everybody, make a list of the companies you want to submit your ideas to. Don't go to your favorite first.
Absolutely. Go to the one you most likely will be refused from.
And then take that information, if they give you a little bit of feedback, right, change it, because it will change.
Absolutely.
With that feedback, and you're absolutely right. And now that you've got a few comments, a few suggestions, you've changed it to submit.
By the time you've got to the last guy,
then you're ready.
Your sales pitch is totally different. Yeah. I mean, and I think and we're also quite afraid when we knock on that first door. I always say to everyone, you know what, when you knock on the first door, he's going to be rude. But that's okay, he's not your friend. You didn't go there to make a relationship of a friendship. You went there because you had a product that fits his, and you have to convince him why he's got to use it. And then by the time you get to the third guy, your skin is so thick by then anyway, it really doesn't matter, because it's not rude about your product. He's just a person who doesn't need what you have. But don't take it personally just because he didn't like it. Doesn't mean to say the next person doesn't like it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that too. Because that rejection is tough for people. But I tell everybody, you want to be a no collector. Collect the no's.
Absolutely.
But make friends. Right? I mean, don't look at it as, you know, this relationship's going to end today. It's just no today. So walk away and say, you know, meet them, be very polite. Don't try to argue it, but know who they are and say,
absolutely,
I'll come back around. So I tell everybody, it's just meeting friends. And you just haven't met the right friend that's going to take your idea yet. So it's just shifting your mind just a little bit. But you're right. There's going to be a lot of no's. I'm a no collector. I tell everybody. I've collected so many no's. You cannot believe how many no's I've collected. But it doesn't bother me, because I know that there could be a yes. And so I know I have to knock on a lot of doors.
There's a lot of doors. And I think also your rejection, I always find that when you're meeting with people, as I say, the rejection comes with a reason, because the rejector loves to tell you why he doesn't want this product, because he wants to be on top. So I always say, and why didn't you like it? And you go, well, I didn't like it because this, this, this. And I think, okay, maybe I either need to fix it, change it, or by the time I get to the next guy, sell it differently. That's really the key, is maybe he's, and I always find if one guy says, no, I don't want that, then I think, was it the way I sold it? Then I go and sell it to my husband, who has no idea what I do, absolutely no idea whatsoever. So I'll say to him, okay, I need to sell my online TV to a sponsor, but I need to sell it to you first. Then he sits there and he listens, and I think, I got it, don't worry. And he goes, did you answer your question? I say, absolutely. Because in my sales pitch to him, I figured it out as to what makes my online TV better than anyone else's. So
yeah, what I like about that too, you're asking industry experts, right? And you're getting that feedback to fine tune, tweak it, to get it right. So I think this whole process, for some people, it's gotten so easy, right? And that's why I'm really glad to share it with people. My program now, we have students in over 65 different countries that are doing this. And from two girls in Syria, we have this young man in Egypt that licensed an idea selling around the world by following this process. So we get to see it all the time. And so people ask me, why is education so important to me? Because every time someone takes this information and something happens, I get to walk with them to through that
journey.
You get
journey. To take that
it's
journey.
It's like I did
Absolutely.
It too.
Oh,
yes.
That's awesome.
Oh, so it's a wonderful experience. That's why it's so amazing to watch this whole thing unfold, right? And I love it. And you can do it at any age. We have kids that are licensing ideas to anybody at any age, anywhere in the world.
Yeah. But that also makes companies realize that the world is really their water cooler. Their water cooler is made up of anyone in the world who pitches something. As long as they're honorable about it, they can continue to feed off people who are 20 or people who are 80. Because there could be somebody who's 80 who's been sitting on this idea forever, but just never took it to the next level. And my mom was one of those people. My mom used to come up with the most amazing ideas, but we had no idea of taking it to market because we didn't know how to get it from her to and she'd always say, and what, you know what, I always thought, and my mom didn't have any schooling education. She had, she stopped school, I think, when she was 13 because her family couldn't afford to send her to school. So she went out to work.
Okay.
So, but I reckon if my mother had finished school and had, she would have been a college professor. There's no doubt about it. My mom was a very clever lady. And if I look back on some of the things, I often think, gee, my mom thought of that. You know, when we were kind of, when my kids were born, she was doing things, but she had no way of, and if she'd known what you're teaching, it would have been something she could pitch to an idea of a company that was already a company and didn't need to reinvent the wheel. They just needed a new idea, a new shelf item.
Yeah. If you don't do anything with your ideas, there's a very good chance, like your mother, you're going to see them later.
Absolutely.
And it's going to drive you crazy. Yeah. So don't let that happen. One of the largest toy companies reached out to me recently, Hasbro, and they said, look, we have this new announcement. We are opening our portal to everyone in the world now to submit ideas. So, yes, they want your ideas. They need your ideas. In fact, that particular company, 60% of all their products come from people on the outside like us.
Wow.
Yeah. So people just don't realize about this business models. And they're not teaching it at universities. They're teaching it more the venturing model, right? Starting a company. So I get to share with everybody this, hey, you can do it.
That's so cool. It's a really nice. And as I say, with technology today, there's no reason for you not to reach out to somebody in China because you've done some research. I mean, all of us have phones. We have smartphones. We can do any research. We just type it into the Google search bar and off it goes and comes back. And I remember being at school and we had the paging encyclopedias, and I loved the library. So I used to read encyclopedias from the beginning to the end. And if we had a project on rats, for instance, I would love the journey from L to R, because I would come across all kinds of things, mammals and mammograms and all sorts of things on my journey to rats. Today, you type in rats and there it is. And I always think, my children have missed this entire journey of learning from L to R because they've got this instant gratification. So I think that's where a lot of companies have also got to. They had that learning in the beginning. They're now in this instant gratification, and they no longer have these people who are doing all this research. We're all out there having done the research for them.
Well, it's easy to do homework. I mean, everything's at your fingertips.
Yep.
If I have a new idea and I want to make sure it is new, I could do a Google image search and see the world of a micro category. I mean, think about that. That's incredible. I can look at the world and see if I have a real new idea. So all the tools are available. Anybody can do it anywhere in the world. You're right. Most of us are connected, right, some way to Wi-Fi.
To Wi-Fi.
So I just want everybody that if you have that idea and you want to be creative, learn about product licensing, and you'll be excited about it. And I'll tell you, you will never forget when you reach out to the first company and they go, what do you have? You will be hooked. Because now you know, oh, they want an idea from me. And then once they take it and you see it on the store shelves or maybe on a TV commercial, you walk by and there it is. or you're seeing your friends use it. Oh, it gets me goosebumps thinking about it now, because it's from here to the store shelves. Remarkable.
Absolutely. And you have the tools. I mean, there are so many tools available. You just have to look for them, and they're always all over the place, especially like you say on LinkedIn.
Yeah. You need a roadmap, and that's what I'm trying to provide with all the information. Here's a roadmap. Just follow it. It works. Have a little confidence. Get out there. Get a few no's. It's okay. Get your feet wet. You'll be fine.
Absolutely.
And just jump in. Knock on a couple doors. Because once you make that first step, that's the catch. Just make the first one.
Don't ask permission, ask forgiveness.
Yeah, I love it.
It's pretty cool. And it's not personal. No. I think that's the key is, if somebody doesn't like your product, it's okay. It's not personal. It's because he doesn't need it at that time.
That's right.
Move on to the next one, because by the time you get the fourth or fifth one, somebody's going to say yes.
Well, my ideas when I first started were absolutely terrible. All right, and they got better. So you just keep on coming up with more ideas.
Yeah, I think that's great. Stephen, it's been awesome chatting to you this morning. I look forward.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
To learn from you. And I'm so glad you like, I didn't even ask you how you like South Africa, but clearly you do.
Well,
because you keep coming back.
Keep coming back, and I plan on coming back more and more. So thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It was only a pleasure. And where can everyone find you if they're looking for Stephen Key? I'm sure they won't have a problem finding you. But
it's not too hard. I would recommend going to InventRight, R-I-G-H-T. You want to InventRight.com. That's our website. But go to our YouTube channel, InventRight TV. Find it. There's over 900 videos. They're about 10 minutes long. It's like eating potato chips. You're going to love it. You cannot just stop with one. And learn all about product licensing with our YouTube channel. It's absolutely free.
Well, we'll certainly play a few on SA Community TV, because the 10-minute works, because that's the length of time you spend in a store overseas. Stephen, I'm Janine Preston. And you're with Janine Preston. It's Live, Love, Listen. And it's that time of the day when we talk to all kinds of interesting people. And some of the most interesting people live, believe it or not, in the Karoo. One of our recent trips, we met with Lisa and her mom, who run the Victoria Manor, Ditais Heiser and Victoria Manor, and just so blown away by their 34 houses and their hotel. And while I was there, she introduced me to some really interesting people. And one of them, of course, was Chris Marais, and the other one was Juliana de Toy. And we had breakfast together, and I was fascinated by the reasons they moved to the Karoo, because they live in Craddock.
So together with Tony Jackman and other dignitaries who obviously are part of the Daily Maverick, they all live in Craddock. And I can't think of a nicer way to live. So I finally had the opportunity of tracking them down and come and chat to me a little bit about the book series that they wrote called Karoo Roads 1, 2, 3 and 4. And in this digital age, just slow travel and printed books became so popular, and I have the opportunity of welcoming Juliana de Toy on the line. Hi, Juliana.
Hi, Janine. How are you doing?
I'm good. How is the Karoo? It's got to be hot.
Oh, no, the Karoo is hot. It is, you know, this time of year, it's amazing to watch all the people sweeping through it and, you know, stopping over. I mean, the Taste Hazer were packed to the brim the other day. People, you know, breakfasting and so on before heading down to the coast. But, you know, and it's always been like that. You know, the Karoo's always been sort of like on the way to everywhere. It's a place you used to rush through. And, I mean, I have to confess, we also used to rush through it because it was very – very sort of, you know, hot and irritating and wild, you know, just miles and miles of nothing. So it took us a while to sort of like find the magic in it. And once we did, we were completely addicted. And, you know, and I think I see more and more people also sort of finding the magic in it. And we get, I can't tell you how many, well, you know, we just get more and more people saying, you know, well, we're heading off to the coast, but we'd like to spend 10 days in the Karoo first. Do you have any suggestions? And, you know, it's fabulous to see how, you know, the Karoo is becoming more and more of a – sorry, there's a call keeps coming through.
Great stuff, technology. You gotta love it.
Yes. Yeah, I've got to love it. Got to live with it. And you know, so it's incredible to see how our books as well, I mean, have just increased in popularity. And it's just like such an old-fashionedy kind of a thing because, you know, people are now picking up books. They're reading long-form journalism, which is what we've started to specialize in. We scratch out all the little stories and all the funny little places that people barely have time to sort of stop in or, you know, you drive through. And this is, you know, we found umpteen times in the Karoo. You drive into a town, you look around, you think, okay, not much going on here. Where do we go? What do we do? What is the history here? And they don't know. So we find out the history and we talk to the people and you know, we put it in our books. And it's just incredible. This whole Christmas season, we have been packaging. I can't even count how many books we've packaged and sent out. Everybody's like, oh, I've got to have this for my uncle. I've got to have this for my child, my, you know, daughter, my whoever. As Christmas gifts, it's, what an honor, you know.
I'm sure. I just think, you know, one of the things about the Karoo was it was always a pass through, if you like, place. As you said, people went through it somewhere else. But I think since Africa Burn and places like that, and events like that, the Karoo has become a destination of its own.
Yeah, it has, you know, and it's become almost like a rite of passage in a way for some, you know, for youngsters, you know, heading off, you know, I mean, Africa Burn, oh, what is that? Africa Burn has increased in popularity, and it's just an incredible thing to see all these youngsters heading into the Karoo, bringing their kids, going to farm stays and so on. You know, inevitably the kids are like, oh, there's no Wi-Fi, there's no this, there's no that, and by, you know, they too, they're out in the koppies and playing and feeding Hans Lammerkies or whatever. And like the end of the week, you can't scrape them out of there. You know?
Absolutely. We were actually at a place called, I think it was the Hippo Conservancy down near Hanover. And they had a whole bunch of lambs. And I said to them, so tell me a little bit about the lambs. And they said, well, I said, what are their names? And they went, Ribbicky.
No.
All their lambs were called Ribbicky.
Oh, no.
And just, I love the sense of humor that the desert brings. I love all those things that people bring. And people bring so much to our world. You know, the big thing about the world is it's such a big place. You know, it's an extraordinary big place. And I think that's one of the things that the Karoo is vast, but it's small. Everybody knows one another.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's a huge but very intimate sort of a space, because it's a place where, you know, even eccentrics kind of shine brighter and are almost sort of loved and sort of cherished, you know, by their neighbors and friends and whatever. You know, you can be yourself here, and for a while people will gossip like mad about you. I mean, that's to be expected. But then you are sort of like just folded into the community, and you become, I don't know, just it's actually a really amazing feeling of safety and acceptance. I'm speaking as an eccentric myself.
I was going to say, but you guys have lived there for a while, though.
Yeah, well, we bought the house in 2004 after visiting Cradock for the first time into the year before. And yeah, then we came back and we thought, yeah, you know, this is a lekker dorp. You know, it has all the things we need. It's in a nice position. We love being in the Eastern Cape. But, you know, being in the Karoo side of the Eastern Cape. And I don't know, and the people are just kind and interesting and funny and, you know, as I say, accepting. And there's lots going on, you know, and the people around here have often been here for seven generations. You know, the storytelling is just a phenomenal art here, and people have time to tell stories, so it's great.
And I think, tell me a little bit about the books that you guys have written. Where do you get all your inspiration?
Well, you know, we were initially, when we moved to the Karoo, we thought, yeah, you know, we should do a book, because we had done books before. We'd done two on Namibia and we'd done two on the coast. That was through Strake, which is now Penguin Random or Random Penguin. And then we thought, well, let's do a book. And we did like lots of little snippets in a book called Karoo Keepsakes, which became like a kind of a wild success in terms of publishing, independent publishing, because it sort of became a bestseller three or four times over. And that was great. Lots of stories and still selling well. But then people started thinking, you know, we were like, you know, the longer stories started to appeal. But, you know, we still produced something called Road Trip at Eastern Cape Karoo, which is also, you know, it's just specifically on this region, you know, all the towns, New Bethesda, Cradock, Middelburg, Jansenville, and so on. And then later on, we did Moving to the Platteland, which is the actual experience of moving to a small town. But, you know, not just drawing from our story, but drawing from lots of other people. About 150 other people who had great experiences or who had awful experiences moving to a small town, and, you know, who provided salutary tales and salutary lessons, you know, for those who want to, are made enough to, say, for example, open a restaurant in a tiny town. So, and then later on, in 2020, in fact, during COVID, the magazines that we used to write for just sort of closed down, and Country Life in particular, and we were a little bit desperate and wondering what we were going to do. And then we realized that we've got all these stories that we've collected over 20 years or more on the Karoo, and maybe we could just put them together in a book. And we didn't have money to print, so we sort of put word out to our newsletter group that we had this book in ebook form. And if we could get at least 500 people to commit to buying such a thing, then maybe we could print it. And people just immediately, I mean, like by the hundreds, you know, we were way oversubscribed. And it was fabulous. It was such a gesture of trust or faith or encouragement. And so that was Karoo Roads, the first one. And since then, yeah, we've brought out Karoo Roads 4 now, and we are keen to... you know, we're going to carry on. We're going to Karoo Roads 5. We're already researching, and that will be on the Clan Karoo mostly. And later on, we'll do a whole, and the Karoo Road 6 will be on the Eastern Cape Karoo.
I think that sounds bloody marvelous, actually. I think I want to come join you. Yeah. Let me know when you're off, because yes, I'll come and join you. Why don't you take a whole entourage of people who want to go with you? Because I'm almost convinced as this guide and this person that's in the front. I mean, there would be this whole stream of cars behind you just entering all these little towns, almost like a cruise ship. But you have this kind of captain in the front that says, okay, guys, we're going to stop in Willowmore and we're going to stop in Hanover, and this is what the town has, and Prince Albert is our next stop. I mean, I think it could be a wonderful experience, especially with people who've retired and have no reason to rush home. I mean, why not?
It's every now and then we do think, and often we imagine, you know, our readers with us, you know, we're like, yeah, join us in the back seat of our dusty grey bucky sort of thing.
Absolutely. But,
it is a fabulous, we'd love to do that sort of thing. But metaphorically we do it anyway, you know, we take people along the road with us and we try and imagine, what would people want to know? What would people driving in here, what would they see? What would they think? You know, what would they want to know? So, yeah, and then we start scratching and speaking to people, and, it's great. We do have a wonderful life, I must say.
I think that's amazing, and I really wish you all the best. Please tell me where people can find your books so they can rush off and buy them and join you on this amazing journey.
Oh, great, thank you. Yeah, you know, they can just on our website, which is karoospace.co.za, there's a little section there called, at the top, it says print books. There are also e-books if you want. So they can just click there, and the online sort of ordering process is fairly easy, I think. Otherwise, they can just send an email to me, and that's Julie, J-U-L-I-E, at karoospace.co.za. And then, of course, we do sell all over the country, mostly in independent bookshops and Patstalle, you know, most of them in the Karoo. So, we can always get books to anybody who's interested.
Oh, I think that's such wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the line with us today. It's just been so nice to chat to you. And next time, hopefully, we'll be able to chat to Chris as well. I know Chris is busy because one of you have to type while the other one talks. I mean, there's a type and talk.
Always. And
thank you so much, Juliana. Yeah. It's really been awesome to chat to you. I'm Janine Preston on Live.
And you've been with Janine Preston of Life is a Beach. And Life is a Beach brings you always your Entrepreneur Hour. And this means we talk to people who are people, South Africans who create wonderful inventions. And of course, those of us who decide to go it alone, take that journey, and off we go. Anybody who wants to send me any information about entrepreneurs that they know that would love to be interviewed, you are welcome to contact me on info@anytimemedia.co.za, and I will gladly get hold of them and interview them. And look out for the space next week, same time, same place. We'll be right back.